Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special solo episode of the Hammerlock Hangover. This is Jeff. There's no Steve. Steve's in, well, he's on assignment. And I apologize for us not putting out shows more recently. Last Thursday, that was me. I just wasn't able to do a podcast. So we didn't get one before SummerSlam. We wanted to. We've been trying to get more consistent, and hopefully we will be in the future. But the summer's been, you know, it's just been one of those things where it's been alternating issues for us. Hard to coordinate. Anyway, enough about that. We're not gone. It's very important that we have some consistency and continue to give you content, because we do have a pretty loyal followership, and whenever we're consistent in dropping shows, it grows, which is great. That's what we want. So I wanted to get you some content, solo or otherwise. This is being recorded Monday evening before Raw, but after SummerSlam. So we're going to talk a little bit about SummerSlam, and we're going to talk about some other stuff. Now, on the last episode, I gave what I call breaking news about the Warner Brothers Discovery contract with AEW and television and all of that. I'm not going to repeat all of that. You can listen to the prior episode or two episodes ago for that. And certainly if you want my views and thoughts on many of the individual wrestling shows of the week or the last 2 weeks, you can check out the shows on the PWC network. I'm on pretty much all of those shows, or a lot of them anyway. A lot of those that are on Humming Media Group. And the ones I'm on Humming Media Group end up on the PWC just after a 3 or 4 day delay. So even if they're not up yet on PWC, and if you don't feel like spending $5 for Humming Media Group, they'll be there shortly. And we did, so there'll be a couple of Smack Attacks. We talked about a lot of stuff, including SummerSlam predictions, where you could see what I got wrong and why I got it wrong, what I got right, and how right I got it, etc. And then Wreckage is dedicated almost exclusively to Collision, and Uncaged is dedicated almost exclusively to Rampage. So I don't think I've been on any of the Uncages since last time we all convened, you and I, friends. Anyway, there's still been no announcement from Warner Brothers Discovery. Does that make me uneasy with what I broke as news? Yes. Is it very strange that there has not been any announcement about a new contract and the details in, what has it been, 7 weeks since Collision started? Extremely. I mean, we heard about the contract extension almost immediately, including the details, including that there was going to be a second show. I mean, we had the news about that 10 months before Rampage ever started. For a while, people thought Battle of the Belts was the second show. Did I reach out to my source? Yes. And he stands by the fact that his source stands by it. So hopefully later in the week, I will get confirmation that it was premature or not correct. But as long as my source stands by it, it's been good before. His source is in the executive suite, so we continue to stand by it. And all I can say is that we continue not to get any information to the contrary. And I would cite that in and of itself is unusual. There's been some other stuff before we talk about SummerSlam that's been weird, and some stuff that's occupied some space in the wrestling arena. And in case you don't want to go back to the PWC shows or the Humming Media Group shows or wherever else I've been, I did an appearance on Wrestling Super for like 15, 20 minutes 1 week. It was on one of their collision recap shows 1 week as well. Etc. If you don't want to check those things, I just want to touch on some of the major stuff or stuff that's been made to be thought of as major. One, the Cody documentary. I watched it today. I wasn't in any rush to watch it, but I watched it today. 2 hours long. Yeah, I agree, it was well done, and there were parts I really enjoyed, but man, 2 hours for a guy who's 38 who's still alive, that's that seemed to me to be about a half hour of too much time. I was sort of bored or wishing it would speed up a little bit. I haven't heard anyone else say that, so maybe I'm just persnickety. But I agree it was well done. But the thing that made news was the Triple H statement that Cody didn't want to grow up to be champion of a secondary promotion. And, of course, Tony Khan's response to that. okay, what was Triple H supposed to say? I mean, do I think he rehearsed and prepared that statement? I'm not entirely sure he did or didn't. I don't really know. I don't have any insight into that. However, what should he have said? The secondary promotion? That might have been more accurate than a secondary promotion. I mean, there aren't any other secondary promotions, although there are New Japan fans out there who continue to tell me the New Japan is number two in the world. So maybe they are a secondary promotion. Should he have said a minor competitor? Because frankly, that's what they are. He certainly wasn't going to say a competitor or a competing promotion. So what do you expect Triple H to say? And in contrast, in response, did I think Tony Khan's response was a little bit silly? Yes. But what do you expect him to say? He's going to bat for his company. Big deal. So, you know, Tony Khan does what Tony Khan often does. And there's a few things that he's good at. And one of them is he's very good at taking whatever question somebody asks of him and answering something entirely different and making it about a sales pitch to promote whatever AEW is doing right now in the near term. And that is a pretty good skill for a salesperson and a politician. So credit him. So he said, we're not secondary in Wembley. We're not secondary in the UK. And there's some facts to back that up. I mean, I think their TV contract is better in the UK and they get more viewers at the moment. Will that always be the case? You know, who knows? Whatever WWE's next TV contract in the UK determines. Certainly they did well in the recent London shows and Cardiff and Wales. And if WrestleMania was in Wembley, yeah, I'm pretty sure they could break whatever records All In is going to break. And I remain skeptical that all of those tickets were sold and that all of those tickets will end up with butts in the seat, as they say. Anyway, so Tony Khan said we're number one in the UK, basically. And I think he said at All Out, so I think he meant Chicago. I'm not sure that they're not the number two promotion in Chicago. I think they actually still are the number two promotion in Chicago. That said, when you have two locales that you can point to say where you're number one, definitionally you're the number two promotion. In any event, I don't think there's any shame in it. It's a company that's about 4 years old. I think they just celebrated their four-year anniversary of formation. And maybe at this point in time, 4 years ago, they might have done their first three pay-per-views or their, you know, maybe two and they were getting up to Fight for the Fallen. I think they probably had done two. Anyway, to 4 years later to be the number two promotion, I mean, they might have been the number two promotion from day one, I mean, because of the investment and all that, but they're certainly the number two promotion in my mind, at least in North America. And that's really where this show is centric. I mean, both Steve and I live in the U.S., so of course that's what we're focusing on more than Japan. No disrespect to Japan or Japanese wrestling, but that's not really what we focus on here. Anyway, so that was that. There was also some information on Vince McMahon. There was a search warrant executed on his premises for a grand jury. Now, people were saying he was subpoenaed to a grand jury. I don't think that he was subpoenaed to a grand jury. I think that the search warrant was executed pursuant to a grand jury. I don't think that he's been called to testify on anything. I'm not sure about that. I haven't checked. I know it's a subtle difference, and the search warrant may well lead to that. People have been speculating wildly on what this is all about. They think it's something new. They think it has something to do with Trump, with campaigns. They think it has to do with the sexual assaults, allegedly. And to an extent it does, but not like there's going to be rape or sexual assault charges. Those, if they occurred at all, occurred in states. And those would be state offenses, not federal offenses, unless they occurred on a military base or the post office or some federal enclave. What I strongly suspect this is securities violations, SEC type of white-collar crimes. I've talked about them before for new listeners who didn't hear me talk about this probably more than once on this show, several times on the PWC, and also a special Mash with Mish on the Wrestling Soup Network, which thank you for still hosting us and being patient, and also hosting my other shows, Garden of Doom and Garden Views. Please check those out. What happened is when Vince McMahon and John Laurinaitis allegedly had inappropriate sexual conduct with women in the workplace, of various degrees over a span of years. And when Vince McMahon, through his attorney, Jerry McDivitt, absorbed it all, kept it out of the public, kept it away from the company, made it so that the company didn't know, and settled it with his own money and had the women sign non-disclosure agreements. And he settled those civil cases himself and against John Laurinaitis, and in his mind against the company, World Wrestling Entertainment, which he did. The releases included World Wrestling Entertainment, and he's the chairman and the major stockholder, and Jerry McDivitt has been their attorney before, so it was nothing really done wrong on that side of things. Whether or not you believe the underlying behavior occurred or not, or whether or not you believe the underlying behavior was so repugnant or rises to criminal or whatever, we frankly don't know details. In any event, they still hid it from the company itself, the board of directors, and the market. And that's what's really here. So just look at it this way. If Mark Zuckerberg had 4 sexual misconduct allegations against him from employees, or really anybody, it would hurt the stock of Meta, Facebook. Because of course it would. He's in trouble. So it would affect the stock. So if he kept it secret, even though he resolves it otherwise, he keeps it secret and he kept it from the market, so he protected the stock. But that protection of the stock, that is misleading the market as well in short-term, medium-term, and long-term decisions. It doesn't matter that it came out okay in the end. It doesn't matter if the stock is doing great today. All that matters is that it withheld major liabilities from the marketplace. And those are violations. Those are securities violations. It's supposed to be a free market, and that kind of liability must be disclosed to the shareholders and through public meetings and through public prospecti to the general public, any investors or potential investors, really anybody who is interested. And that's the price of being a publicly traded company. So that's what I think this is about. And those are offenses. Those are real offenses. And people go to prison over those, including older people. Now, I don't know about 78-year-olds or currently 77-year-olds who just had spinal surgery. But, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with it. But that's what I suspect this was tied to. So obviously more to come in the future. All right. Last bit of little gossip, and then we'll get into SummerSlam, and then we'll just talk about news and notes. I don't intend to do a 2-hour solo show. I don't think any of you want to hear that. I just want to, you know, give you my takes on some things. So Lufisto, indie wrestler with, you know, about a 2-decade-long career, well-respected, well-thought-of, well-traveled. You know, apparently she tried out for AEW a couple times and, you know, couldn't really get any response from Tony Khan. He avoided her a few times. And then she reported in a long series of tweets directly from her and confirmed in an interview she gave to Fightful, I think to Sean Ross Sapp, but I don't know, to Fightful, basically said that there's a bunch of mean girls in the locker room and they sort of bully the others. And some of the girls women have been bullied and some of them are afraid to say anything. And then of course others benefit from this. You know, we've talked about this before. I suspect that everybody made up their mind as to whether or not she was telling the truth or not, based on their fandom of AEW, you know, the moment they heard her say it, they either, you know, thought it was sour grapes or believed it 100%. And if you believed it, you probably remembered Kaylee Ray. You probably remembered Sadie Gibbs. You probably remember Big Swole, obviously Thunder Rosa still going on. Rumors about, you know, Kiera Hogan, Diamante, some others who we've, you know, sort of disappeared for the most part, but now we've seen them both on Collision, and Diamante at least seems to be part of a short-term program. You know, but it was kind of weird how all of a sudden, like within, I don't know, 1 or 2 hours, there was like a bevy of like the Ant Queen sent out an instruction to all of the worker ants to all send out a tweet in defense, or Zeta, hexagram, in defense of the women's division and Tony Khan and all things AEW with regards to women. This was on the heels, by the way, the whole thing of that sign that said, book the women's division better, that was caught on Dynamite, and for whatever reason, the cameraman kept it there. And the person who held up the sign, I guess, had the wherewithal or foresight, or was just a chicken, whatever it was, to wear a ski mask over their face, a balaclava, so nobody knows who he or she was, and apparently they're looking for him or her. Anyway, so this was all on the heels of that. I guess maybe that emboldened Lufisto, I'm not sure. And whether you think the AEW women's division is booked well or not, that, you know, I'm not even here to talk about that. I, you know, whether you think any part of it is booked well, though Collision is booked pretty well. I mean, that's also up for debate, and that's not what I want to talk about either. So, all of a sudden, within like a two-hour period, there were defensive tweets from Soraya, Ruby Soho, Madison Rain, Taya Conti, Taya Valkyrie, Ty Mello, Taya Valkyrie. I don't know, just a host of you know, supportive emails and hexagrams and defense, all saying the same thing. You know, all in lockstep. It was very cultish. Now I'm giggling, but as it turns out, Lufisto took so much grief from this that she felt she had to deactivate her X account, Twitter account, X formerly known as Twitter, the app formerly known as Twitter. I don't know about other social media. And apparently she's canceled a bunch of her indie bookings as well as a result of this. I don't know if she doesn't feel safe or if they don't want her anymore or whatever. I don't know what it is, but, you know, basically she got bullied out of wrestling for at least the near term, which is sort of sucky for speaking her mind. And in the midst of this, Dustin tweeted to her, basically insinuating that he was there for her tryout and he must have been one of the judges or whatever, and that she stunk, that, you know, that they didn't really want to give tough love. They just figured no news, that would be the message, that she wasn't good enough to be there. Which, listen, I am not going to pretend to you that I've ever seen Lufisto wrestle. And I'm not going to pretend to you that just because you've wrestled for 20 years, it makes you a good wrestler. Look at Madison Rain, who's a coach on AEW right now. She is not a good wrestler. And I'm sure that there's plenty of others that we can talk about. I have heard that she's a good wrestler. I don't know. I'm not going to comment on that. To say she's not good enough for the AEW locker room to be a coach, that's a little bit tough to believe, because they got a lot of green women in there. And I just have to believe that she could teach them something, you know, at least just like learning how to travel on the road and how to get through it. But anyway, Dustin basically said, you suck. That was tough love. Hashtag keep stepping, which sounds like a dick hashtag. And it is a dick hashtag. And, you know, Dustin is sort of a curmudgeon-y guy. That's sort of his reputation. But in fairness to him, I think all of his hexagrams, tweets, do end with hashtag keep stepping. So in his mind, I think that's his, you know, much love, or his, you know, he thinks it's inspirational, or keep grinding. So I don't think he meant it in any sort of obnoxious way to her, the hashtag itself. I think that's just like his, what he always uses. All right. So I don't really want to talk too much more about that. Conan made a couple of interesting statements in the last few weeks. Starting with today, he said that AAA is going to make a big push to make big moves in the United States in 2024. And they're going to try to get a TV contract, and they're really going to try to make inroads into the U.S. Okay, Conan, great idea. It hasn't worked for New Japan. It hasn't worked for New Japan Strong. Every other promotion is on the decline. You're about 5 years too late. Like, maybe on the heels of Lucha Underground before AEW existed, you would have had a shot, but this is crazy to do it now. There's no audience for it. If they want to see luchadors, they can watch the 3 episodes of AEW per week. They could subscribe and watch Ring of Honor. Heck, you can even get luchadors on WWE and NXT. So, you know, and MLW, really anywhere. I mean, there's no need. I mean, the best luchadors are here in Phoenix, in Penta, Santos Escobar, obviously Rey Mysterio, You've got Bandido, who's injured, but here. El Hijo de Vikingo, who everyone seems to love. No matter what you, whatever people think of him, and even though he hasn't signed with AEW, he's been on their TV plenty. Commander's signed by AEW, whatever you think of them, him, he's on there plenty. There's no shortage of luchadors. We've seen Gravity, we see Rush, Dralístico. Yeah, I could go on and on with all that until we run out. But I mean, Conan, not a great idea. Also, he said that Jay White's booking has been bad in AEW. I would say that he was right, probably until a couple months ago. His booking was bad on Dynamite, where he's just like part of a swarm and barely making an impact. But on Collision, in the beginning, it was mostly tag team stuff and whatnot. But he was clearly put in the top tier heel slot, sort of against the CM Punk FTR crowd. So he was put in the top slot. And then since then, they've really carved him out. Literally, they have a cardboard cutout out of him as the single star, as the leader, as the top guy. So Conan, if you had said this 8 weeks ago, I probably would have agreed with you. But since then, and based on the time that you said it, I have to respectfully disagree with you. On your ideas about expanding AAA into the U.S., yeah, I don't think there's any appetite for it. I don't think there's any market. I don't know. There's a reason you've needed a lot of GoFundMes over the year. Last thing you said, I do agree with, because I've turned complete heel on this guy, is he said Bray Wyatt should be released. He's too much trouble. I don't know all that's going on with Bray Wyatt. They keep talking about his health. Nobody's saying what's wrong with him. So everyone surmises it's his mental health. And I'm one of those that's jumped to that conclusion too. I don't really know, but that's what I suspect. If he still can't really function, I think Conan's 100% right. The guy gets $3.5 million a year to do nothing. And what he did do, let's face it, it was a meandering mess. And while I tried to enjoy parts of it and did enjoy parts of it, it was slow, it was awkward. And there's a lot of people who don't like spooky, occult kind of characters anyway. They think they're played out, or they just don't like him, or they didn't like The Fiend. So, it seemed to get a good fan reaction, but it wasn't going anywhere. And, he broke his finger and then he can't function. I think Conan's right. It's more trouble than he's worth. They have plenty of people who they're not focusing on that they can focus on. And they've got Cross, who's sort of a cult and sort of like a methodical killer type of character. That they could focus on if they wanted to. He's also got the girl. He also looks better. They have Dexter Lumis, who I haven't seen on TV for a while, who's also a methodical, sort of physical killer type of wrestler. I know right now he's positioned as a face, but he's been a Dexter-like stalker in the past. He can certainly be a heel. And there's others too. Let's face it, Roman is working about as slow as anybody I could think of as a solo. I mean, they've got plenty of people doing it, and they've got plenty of people in the NXT system, and they've got plenty of people that we haven't seen on TV. I mean, we haven't seen the Sangha Maniacs on TV. We don't know what's going on with the Creed brothers. We haven't really seen Lashley wrestle in ages. We're not exactly sure what's going on with that crew. Omos, was off of TV for about 10 weeks. I know he got married, but then he shows up at SummerSlam for the Battle Royal. We haven't seen much of him. I mean, I'm not saying that I want to see these guys necessarily, but there's people like Dolph Ziggler who haven't been on TV very much. They've had to send people to NXT to do some programs, like a Baron Corbin, like a Drew Gulak, Los Lotharios. But if you think about this, when's the last time you actually saw the tag team Legado del Fantasma as opposed to just Santos or Rey on TV? I mean, there's lots of people. Shelton and Cedric haven't been on very much. Apollo Crews barely on. When's the last time you saw Elias? Rick Boogs was in the Battle Royal, but that's about it. And not that he's been doing anything, but Riddick Moss too. I mean, I'm just saying that there's people that they could try to do that. Vince Russo, give everyone a story. Women's wrestling. We haven't seen much from Nikki Cross and the thing with Candice LeRae. We haven't seen much with Indy Hartwell, Tegan Knox, Emma. it goes on. We still don't know where Alaya is, or Aaliyah, however she pronounces her name, but she's still on the roster as far as I know. Dana Brooke, they sent to NXT. The Unholy Union, they came up, they had a couple good matches. They lost to Shayna and Ronda, and then Ronda decided to leave wrestling, we think, we hope. Lost her match at SummerSlam. Maybe we'll never see her again on wrestling. Cool. And now we learned today that Sonya Deville tore ACL about 10 days ago in a wrestling match, and she's going to get surgery. And so, you know, this women tag team that we had Raquel and Liv as tag team champions, but Liv got injured, so they had to do a switch there. And now Sonya Deville is injured, so they're going to address that tonight in Raw. But I can't see how her and Chelsea Green can keep these titles. Maybe they'll allow Chelsea to have a substitute, which they seem to have allowed a few times in recent days. But you know, the point being is that there's plenty of people we haven't seen. Like Zaya Lee, where's she been? Lacey Evans, she's had stops and starts. But you know, you don't need the amount of time required for a Bray Wyatt program, the amount of TV time he needs, the amount of storytelling and world building time he needs, if he's not reliable, when you can try to do things with lots of other people, giving them shorter segments, getting more people on TV and seeing what works, or just keeping them in reserve. I mean, frankly, I think they need more variety. They need to move away from, you know, having the same person or faction on three or four times an episode. All right. So that's sort of the gossip. Let's get into SummerSlam. So SummerSlam, Detroit, they sold, 59,000 tickets, or they had a reported 59,194 people in there. Pretty good size crowd. Crowd had pretty good energy when they were up. They had no energy when they were down. They were very inconsistent. Except during the women's matches, they were pretty consistently down during both of those until the cash-in time in the women's triple threat. Everyone loves a cash-in. But they were also dead during the Finn Balor-Seth Rollins match until Damian Priest came to the ring. Then they got up. But before that, they were dead. And by the end of the night, they were dead. And I get it, it's late, but it's your main event. It's your Roman Reigns. It's your tribal chief. The undisputed title, universal title, is on the line, as well as tribal chieftain, whatever that means. And we'll get to that. But the crowd was sort of up and down. If I was WWE, I wouldn't be rushing back to Detroit anytime soon for a major show. They've been having much more luck with the international audiences. And I don't know if we reported this last time, but there's going to be a show in the next 2 or 3 months in India. Now, I think it's in that city, Hyderabad. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but if it's the same venue, it was only a 5,000 seat venue. It wasn't going to be like a mega show, or like a Saudi show where they're getting like $50 million, but maybe it's something different. I don't know. I'm not sure who's on the card exactly yet. And I'm not sure if they're going to treat it as a PLE or they're just going to India for a show to, you know, give that market a little taste and see what else is going on. But they're doing shows in Europe during the course of the fall, Germany, the UK. So some stuff like that. I might consider doing more of my PLEs internationally, where they seem to be getting huge pops. Like, I don't know, go to Mexico City. Go to Tokyo. Invade Tokyo. See what happens there. Or if you don't want to go to Tokyo, go to Okinawa. I mean, there's 120 million people on the island of Japan, and they're wrestling fans. I'm sure they'd come out. Anyway, but they don't cheer. Is that right? Okay. Maybe if you tell them for American wrestling, you can be loud. Be as loud as you want. Maybe they'll get it out of their system. All right. So the first match was Logan Paul versus Ricochet. I heard a lot of people saying how great a match this was. I don't think it was a great match. I don't think it was a bad match. By the way, this is sort of how I feel about SummerSlam generally. Like, if this was like Backlash or Fastlane or some secondary or tertiary PLE, I would have thought it was a good show. Not a great show, but a good show. But for SummerSlam, which is like second only to WrestleMania in canon, maybe third to Royal Rumble if you're me, I thought this was a letdown. I mean, last year's SummerSlam was a giant event. You had a lot of returns. I think Becky was in a big spot. You had Bayley, Io, and Dakota Kai came. We first got introduced to Damage Control. There were surprises. I think Pat McAfee came out and had a match. There was all sorts of stuff going on. This year, not really. I mean, you know, there were some returns, but sure, it's good to see Omos and an MVP again, but just for a battle royal. And, you know, again, we saw Rick Boogs and Apollo Crews and folks like that in the battle royal. But, you know, hardly, you know, the big returns anybody was, you know, hoping for. There was no Rock, which I keep telling you that's not going to happen, but people keep wanting it to happen. And I get it. And, you know, and maybe before this is all said and done, and depending on how long the SAG-AFTRA and the Writers Guild strikes continue, maybe he will. Maybe he'll have the time, and maybe his insurance companies will say, all right, as long as you keep it very tame. Anyway, Logan Paul, don't like the guy. Don't care for him. I've said that be careful, probably need to cut ties, but I don't control that world, and I'm going to try to separate the art from the artist. The rapidity at which he's picked up this, or that he's a natural at it, is amazing. He keeps adding new moves to his arsenal. Like, he can work now. There's definitely times during this match where he and Ricochet had to improvise. And I tell you, I think Logan Paul generaled the match and worked it better than Ricochet. And his facial expressions when he yells to the crowd and interacts with the crowd. I mean, I know there's things he can do that other people can't do, but, you know, he saw the kid with the C4, you know, thermos, and he, you know, drank from that, and then he poured it on, I think, Ricochet, who was, you know, prone on the ground at the time. I mean, that's, you know, MJF does that and people say it's great. Logan Paul does it. It's great too. And they're both young, but I mean, MJF, for as young as he is, this is what he's done for the last 8 years or 6 years, whatever it's been. Logan Paul, no. I mean, you know, what's he up to, like about a year and a half of training? And he's great. He's just so naturally good. He's a big, athletic-looking guy. He's such a good heel. Anyway, I thought the match was okay. I expected them to do the Dragon Ball Z spot again, where they both, like, Chris, you know, leap at each other and collide midair from opposite ends of the ring. I don't know if they decided not to do it because it was spontaneous and, you know, it's too hard to do, or maybe it hurt more than they wanted to, or Logan Paul didn't want to risk another injury. I mean, he's had a couple injuries in some of his matches. I don't blame any of that. But he won by somebody in his entourage sneaking him brass knuckles. I swear it looked like Sami Zayn. It obviously wasn't, though. And, you know, his titanium reinforced reconstructed hand with the brass knuckles caught Ricochet in the air and knocked him out, and he got a heel win. You know, maybe they thought Logan Paul needed a win. He had been going 1-4, or I think he'd only won one match against The Miz, and maybe they figured he would stop being an attraction if people knew he was going to lose every match. Maybe he has some sort of creative control. I mean, he was booked pretty strong in the Royal Rumble. He was in the final three, if I remember correctly. Maybe they want to have another rematch. Maybe they want to roll it back again, which would be cool, because this is certainly not a satisfactory end. I'm not sure what Braun Strowman's event horizon is for returning. So maybe they want Ricochet and him to have a trilogy, you know, and give Braun another 6 or 7 months to come back. I don't know. This was good. It wasn't great. I was expecting more of the high flying, you know, almost cartoon come to life. But as far as matches go, it was pretty good. I know I'm sounding like I didn't think it was that great, but I enjoyed it. It's not like I thought it was a bad match. It was a good opening match. The crowd was hot for it. You know, Logan wanted to get out of town to go accompany his brother in his MMA or his boxing match, which apparently he won by a unanimous decision. So yay. And then the next match, which was, to me, was the match of the night, was Brock Lesnar against Cody Rhodes. This is exactly how I diagnosed it on the PWC, that Brock Lesnar was going to be destroying Cody Rhodes for most of it, but Cody, something he was going to Hulk up or Cody up or Rhodes up, and he would win with the wrestling move. The wrestler would win with the wrestling move. And that's basically how it happened, but I knew it wasn't going to be, you know, I knew he wasn't going to submit Brock with the Kimura. That wasn't going to happen. I knew he wasn't going to do a roll-up or like a clever reversal of leverage where he, you know, basically got a schoolboy. Like, he got the win over Brock the first time. He got his shoulders down sort of by surprise, 1-2-3. I knew it was going to be real wrestling move, and he hit him with 3 crossroads for the clean win. They were not the best crossroads I've seen. Brock is a really big guy, and Cody is a pretty lean guy. But I thought the match was great. At the end, Brock, I really do think that this was unscripted. Even if it was scripted, it was done really well. You know, Brock basically went up to a tentative Cody, shook his hand, gave him a hug, and basically did the Hulk Hogan with him. He raised his arm, pointed to him with his other hand, you know, the Triple H, Daniel Bryan pose, you know, the typical one where the older wrestler shows the younger wrestler respect. I mean, there's only like 6 years between them, but still, it's Brock Lesnar. And he, you know, made them face all four sides of the ring, and did it, or three sides, you know, not the ramp side, maybe all four. And the crowd acknowledged it, and Cody had this like smile on his face. Like, he looked like a kid who had just gotten like ice cream from the real life Santa Claus. And so that was the only part that made me think was scripted, because that face was too little boyish, being happy. But maybe he was legitimately happy that Brock Lesnar, who's a legend in this business, he is. I mean, he's probably in my top 10 of all time. The Brock Lesnar did that unscripted, or even if it was scripted, Brock doesn't do anything he doesn't want to do. So either way, he was willing to do it, and he looked like he did it enthusiastically. And that is a great vote of confidence for Cody, and sort of unexpected from Brock. No, completely unexpected from Brock. So listen, the funny thing is, I've heard people trying to retrofit a story into the Brock Lesnar beating up Cody all along. And, you know, as you recall, I made up my little story, which was, I didn't say it was great, but it was a story basically, in some that, you know, that Brock never believed that anyone else could beat Roman before. And he didn't really care, because he was getting his title match. But after he lost his title match at SummerSlam last year, with the stipulation that he could never challenge for the belt again as long as Roman was champion, he didn't believe in any of the other challengers, but he bought into the Cody hype, and Cody let him down. So Cody didn't just screw Cody, he also screwed Brock, because Brock knows he can beat Cody for the belt. So that was the story I came up with. It never happened. Meanwhile, I've heard some pretty prominent podcasters put forward that theory of the story now, the one I did weeks and weeks ago, several times on several forums, which probably got around to some of those people anyway. Anyhow, I didn't say it was good, but it was something. I don't even think that's what it was. I think right now, from what we just got, I think the inference is, and I don't think there'll ever be any clarity, watch it in a half hour when Raw goes on, that, you know, Brock, you know, has a promo that explains. So I don't think so. I think Brock is gone for a while. I don't think we'll see Brock again until, you know, the Royal Rumble or something like that. Anyway, so I think, though, from the actions, the story is, he didn't respect Cody. He never respected him at all. He didn't think he deserved the spot. But now, through trial by combat, he now respects Cody, and he showed the world his respect, and he showed Cody his respect. And that's the story. It's like Japanese wrestling. It was all told in the ring. There's no words to it. And I think that's the story, and you're going to either have to accept it or not. And next, Cody's going to move on to something else. Which brings me to a little tidbit of news, by the way. You know, we were told that WWE was having a hiring freeze. And, you know, I always said that's bunk. If there's a freeze, it's about corporate staff, employees of WWE, you know, so that when the two companies do finally merge, they can sort of get rid of redundancies and increase efficiencies, et cetera. It wasn't about talent. And there were a couple signings. Logan Paul got a signing. We're not sure about Drew McIntyre, and we're going to get to that too, because I'm not sure about Drew McIntyre. There might have been one signing in the interim. And then, you know, there are people, FTR re-signed with AEW, Jay White signed with AEW, the Elite re-signed with AEW, and everyone's reporting that WWE was interested in all of them, and another one got away. I'm not sure that WWE was ever interested in any of them. None of them were ever out of contract. Well, Jay White was, but the others were never out of contract, so WWE couldn't have even expressed interest to them. They couldn't have negotiated with them. They couldn't have made them an offer. And, you know, me and Steve have had this argument before, and actually it's more fun if you listen to it before, but, you know, I think the WWE might have had interest just for poaching rights, just to take the four EVPs from AEW, but I'm not really sure that would be best for business, and I don't think that they operate that way anymore. I think maybe 20 years ago, Vince would have done it just to be petty. But especially in the last couple of years, Hangman Page, no way would they put up with his nonsense. He's too entitled. And the Bucks clearly want to be in control of things, and they wouldn't be in control. The Bucks are not getting creative control. Probably no one's getting much creative control, but the Bucks certainly wouldn't be. And I don't think the Bucks versus the Usos are the big money you think it is. And frankly, the Usos are busy with something right now. Kenny, yeah. I mean, Kenny could have a AJ Styles-like career, a Finn Balor-like career, and that's great. I think they might have had some interest in Kenny, but Kenny wasn't interested in leaving his friend. So, I mean, I don't think it's any big deal. Anyway, so in the interim, we learned last week that Kairi Sane signed with WWE, which is interesting in and of itself, because when she left, everyone's like, she left in disgust. She hates it here. She's never coming back. WWE ruined American wrestling for I hope that when she's done with New Japan, she comes to AEW so that she can fall in love with wrestling again. Well, she re-signed with WWE. Shut up. She left on good terms. I don't know what any of you are talking about. Oh, Brian Pillman Jr., he's the one that we think signed in the interim. And he might be in Minneapolis tonight also. So the other one, Nick Aldis, apparently he agreed to terms with WWE. They keep tossing around the line as a producer role. Maybe he is. I know Bobby Roode's been working as a producer, you know, but he's injured. He's recovering from his second spinal fusion surgery. I, of course, have said many times that what's the best feud for Cody now, because it's going to be a while before he can get back to Roman? Nick Aldis. They had some unfinished business. They battled over Sweet Charlotte. They fought in the original All In. It got personal. It's an easy story to tell. They're both well-dressed people who present well and think that they should be the face of a company, the franchise. They both were the face of their respective companies. And Nick Aldis, I believe, is 36 or 37. So he might even be a little bit younger than Cody. And we've seen this doesn't necessarily mean that a wife comes along too. Or a spouse. I mean, Chelsea Green is back, but Matt Cardona isn't. He's still a free agent. But Nick Aldis, I don't really believe the producer line. I think that's smoke. I think that we're going to get what I want, hopefully. Anyway, back to the match. So I thought this was a great match. Cody won, of course. And then we had the Battle Royal, 25-man Slim Jim Battle Royal. My pick to win wasn't even the Battle Royal. I thought that... Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits would be in there, and maybe with Omos too. I noted that the graphic at some point only had 24 heads, not a 25th, and I thought it was going to be Bobby, because they've been putting him on SmackDown, and we haven't seen him wrestle, and, you know, I'm a little bit in love, he's my bromance, et cetera, et cetera. But it wasn't, it was Omos. So I obviously, when you know, I reached too far. LA Knight seemed to... obvious, and you know, but I looked in there and didn't see any star power or people who needed it. You can say AJ's a star. Yeah, he is. I mean, there was some top end talent, Austin Theory with the US title, but Sheamus, but I felt like they were all involved in other things. That there's no reason for this. So once I saw that Omos was 25, I knew that LA Knight was going to win, and he did. I love a battle royal, unless they're really, really bad. This was not really, really bad. This was a pretty good battle royal, and LA Knight won. And you all know that I've been an LA Knight supporter for years, and kept saying he was going to be a star. He's going to be a star, and I might have even talked Steve into it. I think he even agrees with me. He probably does now. But so LA Knight won the battle royal, cool. And then we instantly see a commercial where he's in a Slim Jim commercial with Bianca Belair and also the ghost of Randy Savage. So that was pretty cool. Then the next match was the MMA match between Shayna and Ronda. Probably the less said about this match, the better. It was a worked MMA match with, as Chris Ams, one of my partners at the PWC, said, professional wrestling already is worked MMA, which was brilliant and succinct. And it never really works out. And this really was no better. I didn't think it was as awful as other people thought it was. I mean, this is sort of exactly what I expected, except 3 or 4 minutes shorter. So when it ended quickly, I was pleased. Anyway, it ended with Shayna choking out Ronda. And we hear that Ronda, you know, she may be done with wrestling, or if she comes back, it'll be a surprise like the Women's Royal Rumble or something like that. But if she's gone, bye-bye. Also heard a rumor that Nia Jax might be re-signing with the company. Well, Shayna and Nia Jax had a pretty good women's tag team. Kairi Sane and Asuka had a pretty good women's tag team. You have the Unholy Union. You have K&K Dance Factory. You could put Candice and Indy back together again. And you could probably fit together a few other teams and actually make them teams, as opposed to just throwing folks together, but sometimes you make teams by throwing folks together. But you actually could have five real tag teams on the roster with Raquel and Liv when Liv recovers, if you want to come back, with Chelsea and Sonya, if you want, when Sonya recovers, or when Carmella, you know, gives birth successfully this time, and then, you know, recovers and is ready to come back to work. You know, that would be great as well. There's others too that you can make do with. I mean, you know, love to see Mandy Rose come back and bring Toxic Attraction up. You know, they're not doing anything particularly interesting on NXT separate. Some acts work together. The Four Horsemen were never anything without Ric Flair in the front. There's nothing to be ashamed of. Anyway, so Shayna won. Bye-bye, Ronda. Then we had Gunther versus Drew McIntyre for the Intercontinental title belt. This was a good match. Very good. Brutal, tough, hard-hitting. But it was 14 minutes and Drew lost clean, which I guess is okay for Gunther, but it's weird. It's a little weird. I was expecting some sort of chicanery, either some sort of interference with Imperium, maybe a disqualification, maybe a double count out. Maybe the two of them were chopping each other outside of the ring and they lose count that they're both being counted out. Maybe they actually announced a time limit for this match and there'd be a time limit draw, even though I was reminded that they haven't used time limits in WWE in a long, long time. I mean, again, good for Gunther, good match. I don't know what this means for Drew. I mean, could it be that heel turn that he probably could use anyway? But I know he doesn't really want to do that, but maybe he's just saying it. You know, I mean, when the WWE folks give interviews, they're work interviews. They're not really telling you their heart. There might be kernels in there, but like when Sheamus was saying, you know, that Roman gets too much time. Sheamus working. Sheamus knows that he's on a short list of people that can be in a mini feud with Roman, you know, between now and WrestleMania. And that, you know, and he's got two guys in his group, and you know, Roman at any given time has a couple guys in his group. Sometimes more, maybe more to come, who knows? Maybe less to come, who knows? But I don't know. Maybe, you know, maybe Drew just uses the fact that he, you know, when he got knocked off the top turnbuckle and he landed on his Magic Johnsons, that, you know, he just couldn't recover after that. Maybe it's as simple as that. But it could fuel a heel turn. That'd be fine also. But I was just surprised. I was surprised that he lost clean so quickly. And you know me, I don't want long matches. And, you know, 14 minutes isn't long. That's perfect. But for these two guys, I would have expected at least 25 minutes before there was a clean win. Anyway, I'm repeating myself, so I'm going to stop. I was reminded recently that sometimes I talk a lot. So the next match was the triple threat Bianca Belair against Asuka, the champion, and Charlotte Flair. This match, the crowd was dead for it. Charlotte, this whole turn back, I don't think she was planning to come back this quickly. She hasn't really seemed into it. She wasn't very sharp. Anyway, the story was that, you know, it was every person for themselves. Asuka was sort of lying in wait, letting Charlotte and Bianca, you know, beat each other up. At some point, Bianca was flung over the ring. She banged her knee. They called medical out. She was limping. They were selling it like it was real. There was no X symbol, but it was pretty well done because one referee, the match main referee, I think Jessica Carr, got back into the ring only when the medical staff and another referee came out to check on Bianca. So maybe they didn't do the X signal because it's a major show and you don't want the crowd and the Peacock audience to know someone really got hurt. Maybe you can talk yourself into it. Bianca's selling it pretty well as she's, you know, stumbling and limping and, you know, basically putting her all over weight on these folks as they're walking up the rampway. She's looking backwards earnestly and maybe a little too earnestly. And at that point, I realized, yeah, this is what I thought it was. It's a work. It's not a shoot, but it was pretty well acted. Anyway, she runs back in and basically she does a move from the top rope, basically a 450. So, I mean, you knew right then and there that she wasn't hurt. Anyway, at some point, Charlotte's working that injured knee. She puts on the figure eight. Bianca is writhing in pain. Asuka picks this moment to come back in, and she blows the mist right into Charlotte's face while she's doing the figure eight. So Charlotte comes down. She's helpless. She's writhing in pain now because she's got mist in her eyes. And Asuka thinks she's got Bianca where she wants her, but no, Bianca turns it around and gets a surprise win. 1-2-3. Bianca wins with a roll-up. And Bianca is now the three-time women's champion, so good for her. Except the damage control music comes on. Actually, it's Io Sky's music coming out. And Bayley and Io come out running together in lockstep. All this dissension they've been teasing, there was none of it tonight. They were in lockstep. Bayley takes the case from Io, and she takes out Charlotte with it. She takes out Asuka with it. She makes sure that the referee takes it and says cash and cash, or she gives it to Io because I guess Io has to cash it in. And Io gets it to the referee and says, "You want cash in?" Yes. And Io climbs up to the top rope. Ring the bell. Ring the bell. They ring the bell. She does her splash on a already prone Bianca Belair, and we have another new champion. So Bianca Belair's third reign is a very short reign, but after a hard fought victory with a damaged knee and went through hell. So yeah, she's still strong. And listen, everyone's making a big deal of it, but she's young. She's was the NXT Women's Champion. She's held all of the WWE titles. She has the modern era record. She held the title for more than a year. It's fine. She's fine. Charlotte doesn't care. I don't think she really wanted to be there at the moment. And don't worry, she will break her father's record. She's got plenty of time. And so Io and her and Bayley are hugging, and surprise, Dakota Kai came in. She's still injured, but she came in, and they're all hugging and they're all happy. So clearly they're on the same page, at least for the day. So no dissension and damage control. And by the way, I don't know how far away Dakota is from healing up, but Bayley and Dakota Kai is a possible tag team. Dakota Kai and Io Sky, if Io loses that title in the interim, they're another possible tag team. So there is a women's tag team division they can make if they want to. And since it's also the NXT women's tag team titles, they have some tag teams down there as well. So, if you actually start building six or seven tag teams down there and three or four of them are serviceable on the main roster, then you actually have a real division and you can do some interesting things, and it could matter. I know a lot of people think there's too many titles already, but there's also too much talent for them to be doing nothing. I think there should be a women's mid-card title. I don't know, maybe call it the Pan-Asian title. I don't know, instead of the European title. Or the equatorial title. I don't know, the latitude title. It doesn't matter what the name is. So some of these other ladies have something to compete for. All right, so that was that match. Crowd popped like crazy for it, by the way. They were dead most of the rest of the match. Then we have Seth Rollins against Finn Balor, Judgment Day. Really selling the thing that Finn was mad for 7 years. He wasn't really mad the whole 7 years, or at least we didn't know about it. I mean, he was demoted to NXT for a while. He was the NXT champion, I think, twice while he was down there. Broke his wrist once, maybe, but it was his jaw twice. I don't know. Whatever. This match was fine. It was okay. It's Seth Rollins and Finn Balor, two guys I don't really much care about. Crowd was dead until Damian Priest started making his way there. And then from the other vantage point, Rhea and Dominik came. They've got the case. Dominik has his North American title. They're making distractions. Finn's not sure what to make of it, but Damian's like, "No, we're here for you. We're here for you. Don't worry. I'm not cashing this in on you. Use the case against him. Use the case against him." But Finn doesn't trust him. Priest is sort of disgusted with the whole thing. They try to distract to help Finn be able to use the case as a weapon, but he bollocks it up. So Priest goes to the other side of the ring while Rhea and Dom are distracting the ref, and Seth knocks Dom out. Of course, and then Rhea goes to care for Dom. Seth and Rhea aren't getting physical. She doesn't block the ring or anything. While distracted, Damian Priest rolls the case in there presumably for Finn to use, but Finn just sort of leaves it there. He doesn't really know what's going on. He doesn't turn his back. But when Seth comes in, he sees it and positions himself to do a curb stomp to Finn's head on the case itself, and then he retains. So the case, which was there to help Finn, backfired. The way they played it out, some people didn't like this. They didn't think it was choreographed well. I thought it was choreographed really well. I mean, it seemed very clear to me the priest was sincere and he was trying to help Finn, and that Finn, because he didn't trust, because he didn't believe that Judgment Day was for them all, because he's still thinking as an individual, which was, if you remember the origins of Judgment Day, that was why they kicked out Edge, right? Because they were all co-leaders. There was no leader. They were all equal. Because Finn then didn't believe that he was Gollum, you know, my precious. You know, his greed got the best of him and his suspicion. And Seth took advantage of it. And, you know, he got out and still kept his title, which, you know, I got that one right, of course. And, you know, of course, the tension and the dissension between Judgment Day will continue. Will it blow up tonight on Raw? Probably. I don't know. Maybe they could probably make it wait another week or so. But so that was that. And then you had your main event, Roman Reigns against Jey Uso in Tribal Combat. Tribal Combat involved tribal warfare. It was neither tribal nor warfare. It was just no disqualification weapons match. They didn't even try to put tribal looking weapons there. They didn't, you know, try to look up weapons of Samoan tribes or the Polynesian or whatever. I mean, it was kendo sticks, chairs, tables, a leather strap at some point. I mean, you know, the second time in a row where Paul Heyman cut a promo, how vicious Roman Reigns is going to be and how he's not responsible for anything Roman does. Roman Reigns is responsible for what he's going to do. He's going to unleash hell. And last time it was the same sort of slow plodding pace. That was the tag match with Solo. And this was the same thing. Slow plodding. You know, it didn't seem like there was any urgency. There was no viciousness, nothing like that. And again, no elders, no Rikishi, Tonga Kid, Afa and Sika weren't ringside. Rock's mother not ringside. They did get the other Uso brothers in there. They didn't fly in Umaga's kid. Nothing. No clever vignettes about it. They just showed us some of the ones that they did on the SmackDown the night before, which was a pretty good vignette, but they probably should have done it earlier. I still have my hope that someone out there is saying to them, you know, you can do better with this. And maybe, you know, Survivor Series, it's during Thanksgiving dinner. They get the family together. You know, there's a whole tribal thing. The elders are there. They get the bloodline back together, or they tell them how they're going to resolve this one way or another, you know, for better or for worse, or, you know, this ends it all, or whatever, you know, whatever the case might be. Anyway, slow and plodding. At some point, Solo Sikoa, who Jey supposedly took out the night before, shows up when Roman and Jey are fighting in the crowd. Solo beats up Jey, and they're dragging Jey's prone body. That turns out to be too difficult, so they fire him and carry him back to the ring. They're about to unleash some more havoc on him, but Jey makes a couple of comebacks, knocks him out, and eventually gets the upper hand on Roman and delivers a splash, and it looks like he's going to, you know, get the win. And the crowd went wild for this part. As soon as they went into the crowd to fight in the crowd, and from that point on, the crowd was wild. And the crowd was wild for the entrances. Just during the match, they had lost all their steam, and I don't blame them. Not because it was late, because the match was not what was advertised. Anyway, so somebody comes out of the crowd with a hoodie, and he holds Jey so that he can't pin Roman. He can't launch his attack on a prone Roman. It's pretty obvious from the body type that it was Jimmy Uso. I'm saying they're hoping beyond hope that it's anybody else. Who could it be? Is it Umaga's kid? Did they somehow get Jacob Fatu? Is it Zion Quinn? Who cares? He's Samoan. Just anything new. No, it was, he takes his hood off and it was Jimmy, and he's not doing much of anything. And then he sort of super thrust kicks Jey in the head. You know, throws him back into the ring for Roman to get the win. But Roman's looking at Jimmy and like acting like he didn't know this was going to happen. Solo seems like he's surprised. No one knew it was going to happen. It wasn't a plan. Paul Heyman's looking surprised. So is it that Jimmy came home, or is it that the Jimmy, when he was injured, the elders said to him, listen, Jimmy, we were testing Jey and he's fouling, but you can stop this. We have a tribal chief. He's the chief. You must make sure he keeps out. Is that what they're going to say? Or is Jimmy going to do one of these things? Jay, when I was injured, I'm your brother. You barely checked on me. All you cared about was being main event Jey Uso. You wanted to be the champion. Roman's right. You're just, you know, everyone here is out for themselves. At least he's the chief. At least I can respect that. Or one of those things. I don't know. I don't know what it is. There's plenty of people trying to say how it made sense. I thought it was terrible. I have to be honest. I thought it was terrible. Doesn't mean that they can't pull out a halfway decent story or a decent story. Doesn't mean I won't love what's going on in a month. It doesn't mean that this was terrible, but they will do things that make it good again. But in the moment, I thought this was terrible. I really was hoping it was someone new, something new. But at least we know that the injury for Jimmy was a worked injury all along, or was very minor. In any event, that's how the show ends. That there's your SummerSlam. Some tidbits in the world of wrestling. The YouTube shows continue to be doing terrible. NWA, right now they're beating MLW. As of last show, MLW was typically being NWA, but the last 3 weeks for MLW was 20,000, 20,000, and 26,000. And I'm going in descending order. So the one that's 26,000 has been on YouTube for 3 weeks. The second 20,000 has been on for 2 weeks. The other 20,000 has been on for, for half a week. NWA, the last three shows, 31,000, 38,000, and 38,000. And there was a fourth show that sort of also seems like it's in 3 weeks. Well, not to worry. You don't need to worry, which if I got the right week or not, because that one is also at 38,000. So listen, these shows, we're topping off higher than that, 40, 50,000 a few weeks ago, as little as a year ago, sometimes they would get to 100 or even cross 100, but they get 60, 70, 80,000. They just keep doing worse and worse and worse. The last Dark Side of the Ring, I think, was the Bam Bam Bigelow episode that I saw, was 185,000. Some of the Stone Cold episodes that I saw were, they sort of hover around 200, 205, somewhere around there. The most recent Battle of the Belts was 524,000. That seems like forever ago. Dynamite. After dropping for a little bit, it had that blood and guts surge to 953,000, which was 128,000 surge. And they seem to keep some of its instant. Listen, I thought that they would take a bunch of dives after that. And they didn't. They did 898 2 weeks ago and 894. This past week. I mean, is it down? Yes. Is it over 900? No. Is it over a million? No. But I think some of the people who are sort of were in the CM Punk crowd have come back. Maybe it's because there's not much new TV on, maybe the strike. Who knows what it is? But anyway, those are the numbers. Impact, which is sort of an interesting story. It's been going up. 4 weeks ago, it was at 122. Which was a loss of 29,000. Then it went back up to 128. Then it went down to 111,000. But then 2 weeks ago, 155,000. I don't have what it was for the most recent Thursday. So today is August 7th. So you can, and that's Monday. So 6th, 5th, 4th, 3rd. So I don't have the 3rd yet. New Japan, I also now have the 3rd for that. But that was 53,000, 56,000, 63,000, 61,000. The last 5 of the last 6 weeks. Not terrible, not great. SmackDown has been in the twos for 4 of the last 5 weeks. The only week there wasn't in over the twos was the week it was on FS1, where it was 1.230. That apparently is a record for FS1. Okay, swell. Anyway, in the other 4 weeks, the bookend 2 weeks, they've been as high as 2.56. And the lowest was the go-home show, 2.248. I think people have figured out that maybe they don't need to be watching the go-home shows anymore. They're not that important. Rampage, the last 4 weeks, 368,000, 310,000, 315,000, 324,000, which was down 91,000. Now, this Friday, I have a fifth, 434,000, which is not great, but it was a rebound. And I'm not really sure what that's all about. The 400 and they've had some gimmick matches on here. They've had like the Royal Rampage, and they had some trios matches, and then things that were done, things that they would try to drive people to view rather than sort of the mishmash that Rampage has often been. So they have been trying to get people to watch it. So if you consider 434 a success, then mission accomplished. Their shows have been somewhat better on Rampage, not a lot, but it doesn't feel like main event anymore. But it's still pretty inconsistent. Collision, going back the last 5 weeks, 580,000, 579,000, 618,000. And then the week that Adam Cole and MJF were on, 739,000. A lot of people are crediting that to the main event, Adam Cole and MJF versus FTR for the titles. Everyone was expecting a turn. We didn't get one. And I think they're right. I think people did tune in partly for that. But I think also the fact that Adam Cole and MJF had a prominent role on Collision also gave tacit permission to the elite AEW fans, the people who are on Team Elite. It gave them permission to watch Collision again. Now, this past week, Collision went up against SmackDown. I only have the Fast Nationals. The final numbers will come out tomorrow. They're often lower. The Fast Nationals are often lower by about 4 or 5% than the final. So the Fast National was 388. If you assume it's off by 5%, that means that it'll turn up being 420 or so, which is a disaster. If it's 4%, a little bit less than that. Every now and then, the Fast National is exactly right. And there have been rare occasions where it's highs. Anyway, it's obviously not a good number. I think that should tell people that not all AEW fans hate WWE, and not all WWE fans hate AEW, is clearly there's an overlap there. Whether it's 200,000 or 300,000, I'm not sure. You know, just on live broadcasts alone, you know, the people who probably watch both on other devices, you know, YouTube and all the other things I'm told I should pay more attention to, but don't, because all the money comes from TV. But, you know, obviously there's a pretty significant base. If it's 300,000, that's a third of the AEW audience also watches WWE. Doesn't bode well for Collision once a month. That's faux show. Raw the last 4 weeks, basically been doing around 1.8. The most recent show actually was lower. It was 1.759. Still in the family, but it was a drop of 60,000, which is semi-significant. Also, it was a go-home show. I guess when there's a PLE, maybe they figure that's enough wrestling, or maybe because NXT was their PLE was the night before, you know, maybe people just need, you know, it just might be too much wrestling. People have to pick and choose. But I have a feeling for go-home show weeks, they're not feeling that they're very imperative anymore, because the pre-show will catch you up on everything. Frankly, in the show, it will catch you up on everything. NXT, speaking of that, the last few weeks, 671, 746, 703, and 717. So, you know, it a little bit up and down, but this coordination and cross-marketing with main event talents from Dominic Mysterio and Rhea and Judgment Day and Baron Corbin being down there, you know, Dana Brooke even, like, I don't know who to give credit to. Los Otharios, Gable Steveson's been on a little bit. People are probably curious about him. And it's just sort of, and, you know, if people checked out a couple times, they probably realized it's sort of a fun, easy, nice show to watch. And the men's division has improved with more of the main roster talent on it, even going back to Dijak, who's a fixture there. But the women's division really kicks ass. Anyway, that is the ratings. When we talked about the LeFisto thing and all that, going back to that, it was sort of interesting as to who didn't come to AEW's defense. I'm not sure about, you know, the Mercedes Martinez's and the Chris Statlanders of the world. To be frank, I don't know. I don't know what Sky Blue said or didn't say. I didn't see anything from Layla Gray or Kiara Hogan. But Jade Cargill was completely silent on it. And Jade Cargill is arguably their biggest female star. If she's not the biggest, she's in the top three after Britt Baker and, you know, Saraya, I guess. You know, whoever you want. But Jade Cargill said nothing. And, you know, there's been talk that maybe she's leaving. I don't know. Don't know. Could be storyline, but she didn't tweet anything to AEW's defense, and I found that to be very interesting. All right, a couple other things. Teddy Hart, he was arrested about 2 weeks ago with two felony drug charges. Not really true. AEW filed a trademark for something called AEW Plus. I assume that's going to be a streaming service. Maybe it'll merge with Honor Club. That's probably where you might see pay-per-views and things like that, maybe for less than $60 a month, because Warner Brothers Discovery apparently wants AEW to do more pay-per-views. But that price point is pretty tough, especially once a month. I know everybody's heard that Max is going to do sports. I know that Max put out a statement recently saying they are now positioned to air live sports. They've done it before. They've had some trouble, but they're now positioned to do so. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. I still, all of my information and all of my instincts tell me Max wants nothing to do with wrestling. Then again, people do remind me that they have the Harley Quinn cartoon on there. So, yeah, though that's one of the best shows on TV. All right. More people in AEW seem to be getting back office jobs. I don't really think they're doing anything. I think they just get benefits, health insurance, through that. There was some news about Matt Riddle, you know, that they're deep pushing him because they're not sure he's, you know, quite on the straight and narrow, that he might be more trouble than he's worth. Duh. We talked about this in the show. Oh, Dave Meltzer, who doesn't report any Ring of Honor pay-per-view buys, doesn't report solid numbers for AEW pay-per-view buys, doesn't report any NWA pay-per-view buys, doesn't report really generally any Impact pay-per-view buys, did report that Slammiversary this year did 4,400 buys, which is more than three times the year before. So last year, Slammiversary 2022 did 1,300 pay-per-view buys. That's their WrestleMania of the year. This year, 2023, 4,400, and that's good news. I remember when Kenny Omega's first pay-per-view appearance on Impact, and they did nine times what they did before, 10 times, and it turned out to be 9,400 and 9,800 buys total, which meant that Impact was doing an average of less than 1,000 pay-per-view buys a show, which seems like that's probably what they're doing now. You know, maybe it's more like a 1,000 or whatever, but if Slammiversary gets 1,300, you know, their lesser shows probably get, you know, presumably will get less. But if, you know, everything is proportionate, then, you know, they're getting 4,400 for their biggest show, maybe they're getting 3,000, 3,500 for others. I don't know. The main thing to take of this is that I'm not sure if I would call that success, but that Dave Meltzer and others at his network and in other networks, they know exactly the pay-per-view buys for every show, and they're not reporting because they're bad. They know exactly how many subscribers there are to Honor Club and New Japan World, and they don't report it because they know the numbers are bad. All right. Other interesting information. There's news out there that Fox has said no to SmackDown. We're not giving you your two times raise. We're losing money on you. Go elsewhere. Maybe it's a negotiating tactic. Maybe it's real. Who knows? Opinions differ. We'll find out in the future. But I'm not shocked. I predicted there'd be a sports rates bubble and it would burst and wrestling might be the first victim. I predicted on Hammerlock Hangover. So we'll see. AEW, as it is wont to do, did a whole lot of signings. By the way, have we seen Kota Ibushi since one appearance since the pay-per-view he was on? Rush re-signed with AEW. Kip Sabian re-signed with AEW. The Dark Order, which I assume is Evil Uno, John Silver, and Alex Reynolds re-signed with AEW. Dustin Reynolds, I'm assuming all of these things are three-year contracts. I really don't know. They don't give a lot of information. Also, Eric Young was reincarnated and re-signed with Impact. And The Elite re-signed with AEW. I think we talked about that already. Ian Riccoboni also got more of a full-time gig with AEW. Chris Hero apparently is a producer. I don't know if he's doing anything or not. And there's been a host of injuries. Just a lot of injuries. Rey Mysterio got whiplash. Steve Macklin got a serious injury. Bayley has been injured. She can come on TV, but she hasn't been working. We talked about Liv Morgan. We talked about Sonya Deville. Mark Briscoe had a knee surgery. He was pulled from the main event. We have no information on that. Pac took his place. Apparently, he got injured again, and they made a big deal about it that he couldn't be in a match with Death Triangle. The way they announced it was ridiculous. There was a one of those parking lot brawls between the Blackpool Combat Club and Best Friends. But there were only two members of each team, the Best Friends and the Claudio and Mox. We didn't see Willa Yuta and Orange Cassidy until later. And I guess the reason for that was that the Death Triangle, which was now the Death Duo, challenged the winners of this for reasons we don't know. And earlier in that same show, episode of Rampage, we found out that Isaiah Cassidy and Ethan Page weren't cleared to wrestle. So the tag team partners of Jeff and Matt Hardy were Keith Lee. They dusted him off. I don't know. It's just weird. But there's just been a ton of injuries. Elton Prince, Kevin Owens is still dealing with his injury. Just this injuries left and right going on. Titles. Julia won the New Japan Strong title from Willow, who was never really supposed to have it anywhere. Still no word on when Mercedes Moné will start wrestling again. Trinity is the Impact Women's Champion. That's sort of old news at this point. Is that helping with their resurgence? Maybe. I don't know. A bunch of titles and Impact changed, but we don't really follow them. Aussie Open, I'm not even sure I'll say it. Aussie, are the Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions. So, of course, we saw them defend their belts on an AEW show against a team that we don't know why. And the Kingdom apparently is, although they're signed to Ring of Honor, we now see them on AEW show. So what am I supposed to say here? Brian Danielson had surgery on his arm, and Vince McMahon, as we talked about, he had spinal surgery as well. All In. It's finally going to be on regular pay-per-view. It's going to be on regular on-demand in addition to BR Live. So I don't know why it took this long, but it's been done. And so you can watch All In on pay-per-view, and they're starting to put together a card. Doesn't look like that great a card, but I think they heard that and they're starting to improve it. So it sounds like we might get FTR versus the Young Bucks for the tag team titles. We might get CM Punk versus Samoa Joe. They're talking about Will Ospreay versus Chris Jericho. But of course, people will also report Jack Perry against RVD, which is supposed to be on Dynamite this week. Maybe it'll be both. I don't know. So there are some other matches that are listed and rumored. I strongly suspect that the new women's champion, Shida, will be facing Saraya and probably lose in London to Saraya. No idea about Chris Statlander, though it seems like she's going to be in a program with Diamante, maybe? Or maybe you'll continue with Mercedes Martinez. I'm not really clear. Buff Bagwell joining Teddy Hart in the Arrested. And Buff Bagwell, as we know, he was making a recovery and he was on the wagon. Now he's off the wagon. Whatever the bad one is, he seems to have fallen back off the wagon. Zicky Dice done with Impact as well. Left the same time as Nick Aldis. Matt Cardona is with MLW. Again, those are not generally long-term contracts. And by the time you hear this, his taping period might have already been over. So who knows? It's a very strange world these days in wrestling. A lot more short-term contracts and short-term deals. I'm going to finish up with the second quarter WWE filings. Actually, that's when we found out about the search warrant on Vince McMahon, and they said we don't think it's going to impact shareholder value. Last I checked, the cost per share was $105, so I guess they're right. But they did $410 million in revenue this past quarter, which is a record. It beat the same quarter last year by 25%, and they're over budget in building the new headquarters, and they had less revenue from merchandise because they switched over from WWE Shop Zone to Fanatic. So, of course, there's a lag and a drag with that. Everything else is up. Attendance, live show revenue, ticket sales, ratings, in-show sponsorships. Obviously, we talked about the Slim Jim Battle Royal. There was Rocket Mortgage all over the arena. So whether you like that stuff or not, the NASCARization of WWE continues. Obviously, you know about cricket and the progressive show flow and all of that other stuff. So they're making money despite the headquarters being $30 million over budget and counting, and there being dips in the merchandise due to closing that one store and transitioning to another store, and that's to be expected. So they keep making money, maybe despite themselves, and they're breaking records. Detroit was an arena record in revenue. So I guess All In, great, but you know, that's one show, and AEW is not able to consistently sell 5,000 tickets for its Dynamites and Collisions. Usually it's closer to four, oftentimes under. And I think their whole house show thing, remember they were calling them house rules? I haven't heard anything about any more of those, so I don't know if that was considered a failure. I don't think it was ever just going to be a short-term thing, but it seems to be on hiatus, whatever that means. Anyway, listen, an hour and 20 minutes. I'm out of things to talk about, I think. Hopefully this show will go up. I'm relying on Steve, who's out of town, to edit this and get this up timely, and then I'll put it up in the PWC, hopefully the same day. So hopefully you'll all get this soon. And if soon enough, I'm supposed to be doing a show with Andrew Karluck this Wednesday on his show, False Count Radio. You can find that on the Wrestling Soup Network, but it's False, F-A-L-S-E, Count Radio, not Falls Count. Andrew Karluck is one of the original hosts of Wrestling Soup. So it's really cool that he's having me as a guest host on his show. He's doing rotating guest hosts, of which I might be in a regular rotation. We'll see. We were supposed to do it last week, but he had a personal matter he had to attend to. So we're doing it this week, hopefully. And hopefully that'll be a cool show. And he's been a guest on our show, but I've never done a show with him one by one. And he's even saltier and more negative than I am. So yeah, I'm going to be the positive one, which sometimes I am with Steve, but Steve, he's like a character. He's like Steve Colbert. So anyway, check that stuff out. Check me out on the PWC and the Hameen Media Group, Wrestling Soup Network. And please check out Garden Dune, Garden Views. Dropped a great show this week on Voodoo Visions with the first Caucasian, Haitian initiated voodoo priestess. She does other things. So we hear about her story and we talked about Kabbalah and a whole lot of other things. It was really very interesting. And tomorrow I'm going to release a Garden Views on, had a conversation with a gentleman who's trying to figure out a way to bring civility back to politics and society. And we had sort of a conversation about that. And, hopefully you find it enjoyable. And, you know, I've got tons of shows coming up, the Garden of Doom. Like, I finally got Aboriginal folklore experts to agree to come on the show. I'm getting Graham Phillips to come out on the show to talk about Doggerland. It's just George Mitrovic's going to come back. I'm talking to Professor Robert Temple about coming back. Professor Michael York's coming back. We're cooking with gas, and Professor DeGennaro is going to be back on Garden Views in about a month or so. And Mike Hilliard from the Red Line podcast, we're going to be talking about warfare and space. I mean, what's more exciting than that? So check out all the other shows, subscribe, download. You can find all my shows on the PWC. You can find any non-PWC shows on the Wrestling Soup Network. You can, of course, subscribe to all of them individually, except for Garden Views, which is on the Garden of Doom feed. And if you have extra money, you know, be a Patreon of Wrestling Soup. I have been for years. It's probably going on 8 years I've been a Patreon of Wrestling Soup. Be a Patreon of the Hameen Media Group. You know, not only do you get the shows I do with the other fellows from the PWC and Sinister Master John Enright, but you get the Ayatollah himself, Bin Hameen, but it's with Channel Attitude. So you get Vince Russo, you get Stevie Richards. I mean, Rip Rogers, you get Jamie the Vet Williams. They have Big Ray Hernandez, Colin Wysong, Billy Ray Valentine. The list goes on and on. April Hunter. There's so many people on that show. And some people like Big Vito La Grassa shows up sometimes. They've had Conan, Al Snow, or Aaron Stevens used to have a show there. May again, who knows? I mean, it's actually probably really worth your $5. Anyway, you can follow me on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter at IcarusFellMD. I gave you the other information. So thank you for putting up with the solo show. I hope it was not terrible. See y'all and stay evil, my friends.